golfj.com.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Golf J podcast on FingerLakes1.tv. I'm Jim Sinacropi, and tonight, here in studio alongside Doug Brown for another edition of the GolfJ.com podcast. Rhett DeConey down in the Outer Banks enjoying a little vacation. Nice. Well deserved. And tonight we're going to recap golf's return to the Olympics, preview the PGA Tour playoffs, the FedEx Cup playoffs. We'll tell you what's at stake, or basically, talk about the format and who's in the top five, who's in the top 10, who was around 125 that made the cut at the Wyndham. And also we'll play a snippet of an interview with National Sales Manager of G4 Golf Shoes and Golf Gloves. So, Brownie, hello. Welcome.
Hi, Jim. Thank you.
Now,
glad to be here.
We're also going to talk about the Canal Cup matches later in the show, which is our club, Seneca Falls Country Club, against Silver Creek across town. And it's always fun. Anybody who's listening to this podcast who plays in any of these club matches, it's one of the highlights of the golf season, I think.
Right. It is good to put a team together and basically travel, play another team, as we do it back and forth year over year, home and home. I think it's pretty good.
As
get
opposed
to meet some people that you normally wouldn't play with.
Yep. And you get to play for your team, your teammates, and your club instead of just your score, yourself. So, which is something maybe with this Olympic thing we can talk about because it was individual this year, the Olympics. It's all wrapped up in Rio. NB Park won the women's Olympic gold. Lydia Ko took silver, really coming from behind throughout the week. And Shan-Chan Fang of China won the bronze. So it was, and that was, you could tell by NB Park's reaction that was the biggest event for the women of the year.
Right. NB's been struggling for about the last, all of this year with either a wrist or a thumb injury. So that's by far the best she's played. Go back a year, 2 years ago, she was a machine.
Yeah, and she's kind of fallen off.
I mean, look at her swing. I mean, she almost looks like she just barely waves at it, but she hits the ball dead straight, good short game. I think she's finally healthy, obviously.
Yep.
She just joined the Hall of Fame this year.
That's right. After winning an LPGA, you need to qualify by winning, and I think, what was it? She won her 22nd career.
Yes.
I mean, it's not easy. It's probably the hardest Hall of Fame to get into.
Right, and you got to be a member at least 10 years as well. Okay, cause she qualified before the 10-year thing, but she had to get 10 years in, but so she hasn't been inducted yet, I don't believe, but I think those ceremonies are more in the fall. But a good win for her, and of course she's from South Korea, which has been dominating the tour anyways, but she's quite a player.
Yeah, and Lydia Ko from New Zealand and Fang from China, so like we talked about last week, we were hoping for someone from the Western Hemisphere to be standing on the podium, but it wasn't the case.
It looked like we were going to have two for a while, because Lewis was doing well, and Jarina Piller. Lewis had a bad, I think it was the third round, was her undoing. And Piller really didn't do too well on Saturday, the final round.
Right.
But at one time, I think we had looking like we'd get possibly two, second and third.
But as far as the world of women's golf go, that's an all-star podium, just like it was for the men.
Yeah, the cream rose at the top, because Brooke Henderson wasn't far off. Shan-Chan Fenn's quite a player.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
She's up in the world ranking, so no real surprises there. I thought there was some unknowns in that event to us, because I don't follow the European ladies tour whatsoever. It's not broadcast on television, but there was a lot of good golf. The girl from Russia, there was one girl from Russia playing in that event. And she just got okayed to play from, I'm not sure how she qualified, but late qualification criteria for her.
Yeah, and she's a name, like a few of the names on the men's side that you're never going to see in a major or in a tour event.
Maybe not. You're right.
Yeah. So, there's a lot of talk heading into the Olympics of whether golf should be the Olympics or, about whether the format was good or whether guys should skip it or go. I mean, there was a lot of talk about it. Now that it's over, and I said I'd hold my judgment on it. I wasn't a big Olympic golf fan, as you and Rhett were, I think. I just it felt like a contrived, almost like maybe the World Golf Championships were when they first started. Like we didn't really need them, but you know, it was good. It was different. I like the fact that third place matters. Usually right. that doesn't happen in a golf tournament. And I want to talk about like heading into Tokyo in 4 years from now. What do you think needs to change?
I'm not sure if anything needs to change. I don't have any problem with the format right now after watching it for the last couple of weeks. I could lean a little bit towards a two-person team.
Team event, right.
I don't think it could be four, but I could understand where, let's say that MB Park's partner was 10 over par for the week.
Sure.
And that brings them way down. So it puts a lot more pressure on the other teammate as well to keep performing.
And it would be cool. They'd always play together. The twosome would always play together. It would be a true team event, almost right. like the local tournaments that we used to play all the time, the right. Invitationals, where you and your partner go out there, and if second day you're tied for the lead, you're in the final group, mm-hmm. you and your partner. Yeah, that would be pretty cool. It's just...
I think you're going to do two people per country. I don't know how deep you could go. Would the U.S. get two teams in, or would Korea get two teams in?
That's the one thing about it is... Obviously, America and a few other countries could go 10 or 12 or 20 deep and right. still be better than some players than some of the other countries are fielding. So it will never.
So how do they do it like swimming? They have qualifying rounds to get you down to the final eight swimmers for the 100-meter freestyle.
Right.
Right. So the U.S., because of the size of the country, do we get to send 10 to the heats and then it gets whittled down to whoever?
Yeah, I mean, that would be a format change. Have a true cut. Have, you know, you might start, like you said, well, I don't know if you'd have heats or not, but you could cut down the field. Right. So on the final medal round, it would be, you know, maybe 12 golfers competing or even eight. But all in all, it was pretty good.
I think so, too. I think it'll get voted in for 2024.
Yep.
Because they have votes next year. I can't imagine they would take it out because I think it was successful.
Right? I think, too, that heading into the next one, there will be a lot more attention paid to the qualifying for the U.S. team. You know, this year it was kind of, you know, guys were like, I'm not going to play. I am going to play. So you didn't even really, couldn't even follow the weeks leading up to the qualifying deadline. Next time in Tokyo, I really think that might be something that we watch closer.
Right.
And so that would be exciting, where with like a guy like Jordan Spieth says, oh, I'll definitely play in Tokyo. Well, he's got to earn his way in. So sure leading into the cutoff date,
right.
That should be interesting to watch. I think one reason, too, I read that they can't expand that field is because they just don't have room in the Olympic Village for all the extra, you know, athletes.
Oh.
You know, if you're talking about making it a true team event, even where maybe everybody sends eight golfers per country and you do right. some, I think that if every country sent eight golfers and you played match play, matches, Ryder Cup style, I think that would be phenomenal, but I guess that's just too many athletes right. to add to the already overpopulated Olympic right. Village for these things.
Because in these matches, there were some countries that only sent one. So there must have been some yeah. limitations based on how many golfers there are in a country or some way to figure that out. So if you went...
Well, I think you had to be in that you could send one unless you were in the top 15. So if you were in the top 15 world rankings, you could send two. And since America had four in the top right. 15...
And the guys, right.
Right, for the men.
Right. But why would, like, Paraguay sent one?
You could probably only send one if you didn't have... another one ranked high enough.
Right, where is the next criteria? It can't be just 15 because Canada sent two and they only had one in the top 15. So I don't know all the criteria, but I was thinking if you balance that out to where every country got two players, that'd be their team, it'd probably net out to be about the same 60
yeah.
in the size of the field. I don't think you could go with, okay, U.S. send eight and Korea send eight.
Because you right. have two-man teams and then you go alternate shot, best right. ball, you know, you could do different formats too.
You got to get around the golf course in the day as yeah. well. You got, obviously you got darkness coming at some point in time.
Well, yeah, overall it was good. They probably don't tweak it too much. Keep it right. similar to how it is. It was a familiar format. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much it's going to help grow the game. You know, how mm-hmm. they talk about golf in the Olympics will expose more people to the game and help grow it. I'm not sure.
But there were certainly some countries who saw golf, if they turned on the Golf Channel, where it was public or right. copyrighted or shown in, say, Paraguay, for example, yeah. again, they probably never would watch it. So is there a bunch of 11-year-old girls right now wanting golf clubs? I don't know. Now, maybe Brazil somewhere. Only had one player as well.
Yeah, the host country.
And they only have two golf courses, apparently, now.
Yeah.
So does that an opportunity? Probably is, because that country got all the publicity. But you won't really know the results of that for about 8 or 10 years.
Right.
I guess. So it can't hurt the game.
No, it
at
can't
all.
Hurt. It can't hurt. Right. And
there were some unknowns on the leaderboard for a long time.
Well, the kid from Australia, Marcus
Frazier.
Frazier, yeah.
Yep.
And that's, I think what we did get was two true champions.
Yes.
Justin Rose, in the podium for both men's and women's.
Yes.
You know, Rose, Stenson, and Kuchar.
Yep.
And Park, Ko, and Fang.
Yes.
I mean, that the cream rose to the top, and I think that was a good thing. I think if we did, I think it would have lessened the value of it if we did have unknowns. But, mm-hmm. you know, over the course of four rounds of any golf tournament, the cream's going to rise in the top.
Does.
So,
yep.
One last thing on the Olympics. I heard there might be a push to include a long drive contest in long driving competition as an Olympic medal sport.
Wow.
Which would be probably, it would be pretty fun to watch. And really, right. you know, why is that any different than the hammer throw or,
right.
you know, the javelin or some of these other odd events they have? So that would be another way to give golf some more exposure in a pretty exciting way.
That'll be interesting. We don't know anybody on a long drive tour. We're going to have to do
That's
some
right.
research. Who are you going to pick?
Yeah, it's so, but that was just, I think it was, oh, what's the guy's name? Jeff Schofield. He's a writer for Golf Digest, threw that out there, and I thought that was pretty interesting. But so Olympics are over. We'll talk about that again in 4 years.
Okay.
Come Tokyo.
All right.
But now it's hard to believe that the PGA Tour regular season is over. I mean, it's such a long, long season, and right. but here we are, 4 weeks left for the FedEx playoffs, and the Wyndham Championship, formerly the Greater Greensboro Open, the final leg of the regular season. It was Siwoo Kim, who really blew away everybody. It was yeah. kind of anticlimactic there, but where you could find some excitement was further down in the FedEx Cup standings, where guys tried to get over that 125 mark to right. qualify for the playoffs, and we've been really hard on Ricky Fowler over the past several months.
Yes.
And he really didn't do too much at the Olympics to change that. But he went from Rio to North Carolina for the Wyndham, and he shot two rounds of 67 and a pair of 68s.
Yep.
So he's trending in the right direction, heading into the playoffs. Kevin Kisner grabbed some momentum heading into the playoffs with a final round 63 that included six birdies, an eagle, and one bogey on the final hole. So if he parred, he had a chance to shoot a 61 with a birdie on 18. Johnson Wagner's another guy who went into the John Deere Classic 2 weeks ago on the bubble at number 125, finished fifth to make a big jump to 109, and then tied for seventh at the Wyndham. And he's going into the Barclays now with a ton of confidence. And
yep.
then finally, Luke Donald, everybody remembers him as a former number one player in the world.
Yep.
Big runner-up finish at the Wyndham, and that gives him a big boost, moving up 51 spots to 99 to 48th, which this is big because the way the playoffs work is they cut it down based on your standings as you go. So to go from 99 to 48th almost guarantees him three more tournaments
right.
instead of two unless right. he plays well. So
they cut down to 100 after this week, right?
Yeah, I think right. it goes to 100, and then it goes to 70 and 40?
And 32.
Okay.
Right. So you're right. So a guy like Luke Donald's not going to get down. He won't go over 100, even with
yeah.
a bad week. He's guaranteed playing next week.
And he would really have to play really bad to not make the top 72
yes,
at this
totally
point.
Agree. Yep.
So just real quick before we get off the Wyndham and look ahead to Bethpage, which is hosting the Barclays, is I couldn't believe how incredible Siwoo Kim's swing,
right.
how smooth and silky and perfect. He's got one of the best golf swings I think I've ever seen.
Right, he sure does. I think he's actually, ball striking-wise all year long, has been pretty well. I think his short game has been suspicious, and he probably got through it this week to survive. But he shot 21 under par, right?
Yeah, and he's...
one by five or six.
And another interesting fact that I didn't believe when I heard it at first was that at 21, he's the youngest winner on the tour all season long.
Wow.
So I would have never thought that.
Right.
You know, especially with all the great young players, but at age 21, he's the youngest player. And he snapped a 10-tournament winning streak by players 30 years and older. So
the old guys are taking over this year.
Yeah, and then it's kind of contradictory to what you'd think with all the young players, right. The great young players like the Jordans. You know, you want to talk about guys in your 20s, Jason Day, Jordan Spieth, Rory Mayo, they're all Dustin Johnson. They're all in their 20s. But right. 10 in a row by players 30 and older. And the last time a player in his 20s won a tournament this year, it was Daniel Berger back at the FedEx St. Jude. So, and you talk about Kim's ball striking. He ranked first in strokes gained off the tee and second in stroke gained approach to the green. 93% of his strokes gained were from his ball striking. He ranked sixth in both driving distance, averaging 293.9, and driving accuracy, 73.2%. So if you're in the top 10 distance and accuracy, you're in pretty good shape.
Long and straight. Yeah. It's not bad.
So
but he had a nice week.
Yep, he sure did. And obviously a huge win for the 21-year-old Siwoo Kim. And so now here we go. It's the FedEx Cup playoffs. It's a idea that I wasn't too excited about when they first announced it. What is this, the sixth year of the playoffs?
I'm going to say six or seven.
Yeah, and I can remember when they first announced that they were going to do these playoffs. It just seemed like just a trick. Like it,
right.
But now I look forward to it. It's a great way to end the competitive season.
So they made some adjustments, like maybe the Olympics might make some as well. But early on, the first couple of years, it was over before it started. The final, when they played the FedEx Cup Finals, Tiger had already clinched or Vijay Singh had already clinched. So the tournament didn't matter. They already got the $10 million bonus before the event. But they made some adjustments now so that if you're in the top five going into the last tournament,
yep,
you can win the FedEx Cup. So it keeps people playing.
You control your own destiny if you're in the right. top five.
What I don't like, though, is people can still skip a week if they're in the right spot because they won't move far enough off to, say, the top 10.
Right.
They can still get themselves into the top five and win.
There should be some requirement that makes them right. play. I mean, if it's a true playoffs, you should not skip.
I mean, if you're in the baseball playoffs or the football playoffs,
yeah,
unless you get a bye week,
right,
which is different than skipping,
yeah,
right, you just don't progress.
Yeah, you know, maybe that's something they do too. Well, who wants to do that, though? Who doesn't want to see the best field possible in the first round? You know, I was going to say maybe you give 10 of them a bye into the second round, but I actually kind of like how it is done now. I understand it, whereas the first couple of years I didn't really understand it. We've seen it play out. And
right.
So the top five heading into the playoffs who control their own destiny would be Jason Day at one, Dustin Johnson at two, Adam Scott at three, and I'm going to skip to fifth to Jordan Spieth because four doesn't sound like he belongs there. Number four in FedEx Cup playoffs this year is Russell Knox,
right,
who won a couple weeks ago to jump into the top five. And, it seems like that's one name that just doesn't belong in there. But
he won two tournaments this year.
Sure, he won the HBC Champions in China, the
right.
first WGC event back in November.
Right.
And he's played solidly throughout
yes.
before winning, I can't think.
John Deere, didn't he?
No, it was a week before the John
Travelers.
Deere, wasn't it? Yeah, the Travelers. He won in the Travelers.
But those guys up there all have two wins.
Right.
That's usually, you get more points, obviously, for the win. But, yeah, you still got to maintain because look at Adam Scott. He won those two tournaments early.
Long time ago.
Had a big lead, and he's still number three.
Right.
He's been out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, he has not done well in major season, and you know that was back in February.
Since he left Florida.
Yeah, he won the match play, and
He won Durrell.
Durrell and then the match play, right? Or no?
No, I thought he won Durrell and then maybe the one in Tampa.
It was the Florida swing, though.
Yes,
that
he went
did.
To in Florida, yep.
So then you round out the rest of the top ten. You got Brant Snedeker at six.
He's moved up to
get
to six.
Yes, after missing some time with an injury.
Yep.
Surprisingly, Patrick Reed at seven, who hasn't won an event
right.
this year. Phil Mickelson, who's having a great year at 8 after everybody wrote him off as being too old and done. He's 8th in FedEx Cup standing. Kevin Na at 9 and Justin Thomas at 10, who another guy that we talk about that's just not living up to the hype because he has not, you know, won that major or been too close in contention often enough, I guess. But kudos to Justin Thomas.
He's had a more solid year than we realized.
Sure.
He's consistent. You know, Roy McIlroy, who I pick every week to win, is like 37th or something like that. And you wouldn't – that's shocking.
And Ricky Fowler, a contemporary, I guess, of Justin Thomas, who everybody would assume would be ranked higher in the FedEx Cup standings than Thomas, is, you know, isn't. Thomas is 10th. So,
right.
You know, Justin Thomas could win the FedEx Cup playoffs.
Sure could.
Now, how big of a notch on your golfing belt is winning the FedEx Cup playoffs, winning that tour championship – and being the champion of the PGA Tour for the year is compared to winning a major? I mean, honestly, I think it's a more difficult accomplishment than winning the Masters or winning the U.S. Open. It still doesn't carry as much prestige, but, you know, if Justin Thomas can pull this off or if Russell Knox can pull this off, it's better. It's not the same as winning a major. That's the way golf is. We put all the everything into the four majors, but it's got to be the next best thing.
So it would show that you had one heck of a year and also a good run in the playoffs, because you can't just mail it in these playoffs. You're going to move down the list, right?
Yep.
I mean, Billy Horschel moved way up a couple years out of, like, I don't know, say 70th place.
Yeah.
And he won two of the four.
Right.
And he contended in the other two. And so he got the bonus plus the winning money. And the other guy that moved up, to Bill Haas.
Yeah, that's right.
Moved up pretty good and then won that tournament, hit the shot out of the water to get it up and down basically from a pond. So he got hot at the end. But you got to get yourself in position during the first 38 weeks as well to get in there.
And and the nice thing, too, is the quality of courses that they play on in the playoffs. It's a true test. They're a little different than each other. Of all the courses, the East Lake is probably my least favorite, I guess, to be set as the final, you know, Super Bowl of golf.
Right.
But this week, the Barclays are going to Bethpage Black, which is it's an awesome – I caddied that on that course before
in
the New York State Open. And it was before really Bethpage had burst onto the national scene. Of course, they're most famous for the sign they put in front of the black course that says this is an extremely difficult course and not for, you know, average players.
Right.
So
that's scary enough as it is.
Yeah,
right?
And how much notoriety do they get for that?
Right.
That putting that sign up there, it's pretty cool. I mean, it's a public course. Anybody can play it. They don't even take tee times. You just need to show up really early in the morning and get in line.
Get a reservation.
So this week, the Barclays held at Bethpage Black for the second time. It was 2012 when it was back at Bethpage, and the Black is a big, brawny beast of a course that has hosted two U.S. Opens. Tiger Woods won in 2002, and Lucas Glover won in 2009. A.W. Tillinghast designed plenty of character thanks to a little hilly terrain. I can attest to that from caddying there. It was very hilly. It was a heavy bag, and lots of treacherous bunkers. Phil Mickelson ranks 8th in the FedEx Cup standings, was a runner-up in both of those U.S. Opens. So that's something to keep in mind.
Right.
Looking further down the FedEx Cup at some of the guys that just made it. And Sean Stefani made a birdie on the last hole to jump up to number 123. David Toms at 124 qualified for the playoffs, which it's... That's amazing. You know, didn't you kind of think David Toms was kind of like done getting ready for the senior tour?
I would have thought so, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's in. Be difficult to break into the top 100 without a really good finish for some of these guys. Troy Merritt's a guy at 120. Remember, he won his first tour event last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got some guys just on the outside. Number 126 is Matt Jones, the Australian, probably most famous for hitting the shot off of the hospitality area at a tournament earlier this year.
Yep.
Nick Taylor, Steve Marino, Wee Kim at 127. These guys all just missed it. So those guys probably have little to no chance unless Stefani was to, like, win this week and win next week. Then maybe he could have a chance. But It's
they got to have a big week to get to the 100, then a bigger week to get to 70.
Yeah.
So you're right. They got their work cut out for them. But they're in there.
Right. And it's an opportunity to earn a pretty nice paycheck, too, even if they don't make it all the way. You know, if they finish in the top 20, that's another nice paycheck.
Right.
And then they can take the rest of the month off until
October 13th or something.
When the Safeway Open starts. Yeah. So, yeah, it's going to be awesome. We're going to talk about all along the way, and I can't wait to see these guys play Bethpage. It's been since, what time did I say the last Open was there, 2012? So it's been 5 years since we've seen Bethpage, and that's going to be fun. So I do have a trivia question here this week related to the PGA Tour playoffs. If you can tweet your answer to @TheGolfJ on Twitter, the first to tweet us will win a Golf J hat. This week's question, I'll give you the answer at the end of the show, is just one defending FedEx Cup champion has managed to make it all the way back through the whole year and the playoffs to be at East Lake a year later in that final 32 field. And so I want to know who it is. So tweet that at us. We'll have the answer for you at the end of the show. And let's transition now to our weekly simple golf tip. And we don't always focus on swing tips and things like that. So what do we got this week?
So talk about the condition of the golf course. One of the goals is any golfer should be to leave the course better than you find it. Okay. You know, when we were kids, you used to see signs on the green, fix your ball mark and one other. Well, if everybody did that, there wouldn't be any ball marks.
Right.
Okay. So we're getting it. Well, we've had a dry summer now, but we're going to start getting to where greens are going to soften up. Every ball that lands on a green makes a mark of some sort. Go search for that mark and repair it properly. Rake the bunkers. Do a good job and rake the sand into the bunker, not out of the bunker.
Right.
Don't get it coming up on the backside, right? Rake it into the bunker and leave the rake. I guess I like the rakes down in the bunker where the tines are down and the rake is in the sand trap. One of the things I see is growing more and more is the number of broken tees that are left on the tee boxes.
Especially on the par threes.
Right. And it ends up looking cosmetically curb appeal type. It's just horrible looking.
It's also tough on the maintenance crew because they get caught in the rollers of the mowers.
Right.
And they gotta pull them out of there.
So if everybody picked up their tee and one other, which would be no labor whatsoever, throw it to the side, throw it in a garbage can, whatever, get it off the tee, it'll look better, it'll play better, it'll be better for the mowers and the equipment and everybody else. And it really will look a whole lot better.
Another thing along the same line is divots, you know, especially you go. I've gone out on our course after a four-man scramble tournament, and you'll see 1, 2, 3, 4 divots right
all
in a row,
yep.
And then 15 feet down the fairway, there they all are.
Right,
and I'll go and pick them up, but by that time they've dried out. They're not going to repair. Replace your divot, and don't just lay it over there.
Right.
Knock it in there with the heel of your foot.
Right.
You know, get it in there, and some courses, even replacing divots and doesn't always take. So some courses have sand in the carts that they prefer you do it that way, but most courses don't. But that divot will take if you replace it immediately and you put a little pressure on it. You know, you can't just lay it in there and walk over it.
Right.
Put a little pressure on it. And like you say, the ball marks are just maddening because, you know, especially if it's on your own course, green conditions are everything in golf. And this time of year, it's been a long year. Some of the smaller greens that we have at our club just get dotted up, and they don't look as good. They don't putt as good. And and really, you shouldn't have to replace your ball mark and one other if everybody just replaced their own.
Yes.
But they don't. So I bet you I average 5 ball marks repaired a green.
Right.
Because I just can't stand it. I can't leave one. If I see one, I can't leave it.
Right. If you look at number 12 at our course, too, many, many people get that green on a fly. They're fixing the ball marks the wrong way. They're bringing that bottom piece up, and it ends up like muddy dots all around the green. You really got to just take the sides and pull it in. That's the proper way to fix the ball mark.
Yeah.
You're moving the grass left and right and back and forward is all. Don't bring the bottom up and leave it look like a piece of mud's there.
Right, like a big dollar spot of mud.
Right.
And maybe that's something we can do next week, is show the proper way repair it, because to me, it's an art. You can leave that as if a ball mark was never there.
I think like an hour after it's properly repaired, you would never know it.
Right.
You know, 24 hours for sure.
Yeah, after they mow the green the next day, you wouldn't even be able to tell if you properly repaired it, but a lot of people don't. So.
And all the stuff we're talking about takes 5 seconds. or less.
And you have plenty of time, especially if you're playing in a foursome, there's plenty of time to fix your ball marks. There's plenty of time to rake the bunkers. There's plenty of time to replace your divots. So.
And one time you get a ball in the bunker and you end up with somebody's shoe print, you'll understand what we're talking about. Or you roll into a divot left over from a scramble.
Yep.
And by rule, you got to leave the ball in the divot.
Yeah.
If you play by the rules, you're going to be upset. All right. So if you just try to pass it on better than you find it, ultimately the course will be pristine.
Yep, that's a fact, and it's something they teach in junior golf, but a lot of adults just don't do it. And that's what blows my mind is when I come up on a green, I see a nice big ball mark, you know, 20 feet from the pin, and it's just sitting there, and it looks fresh, and I look ahead, and I'm like, which one of these guys didn't replace this?
How could you miss it?
Right. And you know when you make a ball mark. I can see sometimes you got a 50-yard shot, and you hit a little low, and you might not think it makes a mark.
Right.
But, you know, some of these ball marks are full iron shots, and they just get ignored. It's selfish. It's selfish not to repair.
I think every once in a while the golf shops need to remind people, you know, whether it's a little card on the steering wheel of the cart or when you come in to get a key to the cart or whatever, just a little bit of a reminder to say, hey, the greens are kind of soft today, or stay in the cart path as much as possible. You're not going to get them all, but if you make a comment, probably 80% of them will do what you say.
Right.
Which means we're tremendously better than not making those comments.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, I promised we would talk about G4, and not talk about it, play a clip from our interview with National Sales Manager Carl Hoke that we conducted last week. This full interview will be posted on golfj.com in a couple days, probably on Wednesday. But for now, I want to just play you 5 minutes. And G4, Bubba Watson wears them, and it's a really higher quality equipment and apparel. Our equipment in terms of shoes and gloves and apparel. They also make clothes. And it was a really interesting conversation to talk about, you know, how they came into this industry and how they market this type of stuff. And he was really building up how much Bubba Watson just wearing the stuff has done for him. Good. So I'll play that for you right now, about 5 minutes. It was about a total of a 23-minute conversation, but here's 5 minutes of it from earlier, late last week. Got Rhett Ticone with me here, and Rhett, G4.
What are we doing, Jim?
We've been lucky enough to try out some of their products over the past couple of weeks, the shoes and the gloves, and I'm thoroughly impressed. It's a higher end option. With a throwback feel, and I love it. What's your impressions?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of types of shoes out there now between the athletic style, the slip-on style, and then, you know, your traditional. I would say that G4 has taken the traditional style to the next level with a little more boldness in their designs and some of their fashion-forward designing. You know, they have high tops, and they have, you know, your regular shoe that you would have, and they also have a cruiser model that's a slip-on. But let's bring Casey in. Casey Hoke, how are you doing today?
Doing great, guys. Thanks for having us.
Oh, absolutely. We really appreciate you letting us test drive some of your products. The glove's great. The shoes are great. And we just wanted to get a little more background from you. We talked a little bit about the stuff last night on our weekly podcast, but this will be something we'd like to just feature you guys and talk a little bit more about the products and what else you guys have to offer and what's coming down the line from G4.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, so now you started there within the last year or so, is that correct?
Yes, yeah. It's going on 5 or 6 months now.
Okay, you want to tell us just a touch about your background?
Sure. I've been in golf for almost 20 years now. Started with Dunlop Maxfli Sports, specifically in the Maxfli Golf Division when the Revolution golf ball first launched.
Right.
And had a great introduction to the golf as a whole, and they had a great run there. They were bought by TaylorMade Adidas Golf and was lucky enough to work with them for 8 years in the greater Los Angeles market. And a couple guys left there to start Cobra Puma Golf when Puma bought Cobra away from Acushnet. It was one of the first three hired for Cobra Puma and kind of ran Southern California for them and some key accounts and different roles there for the last 7 years. And had known Massimo and Nicole, who is our president at G4, for a long time when they first started the gloves in 2011. I put some calls in and helped and gave them some contacts and always admired their products from afar. And had been approached a couple times with them and just wasn't the right place, right time, and finally, last couple months, it seemed to fall into place.
Well, cool. That sounds like a pretty good path, and it sounds like you've landed in a pretty good spot. You know, G4, not brand new to the market, you know, been around for a few years, but relatively new as the golf industry goes. Why don't you take us through a little bit of the evolution of G4 and, how they got their start with Massimo and, his reputation and his products from previous.
Yeah. So obviously Massimo comes from the fashion world and had some giant brands on that side that he's, sold off and done right. very well with. And I think golf has always been his passion, and an avid golfer, and loves to work on his game and loves to study the history of the game, and even from a design and fashion standpoint as well, obviously. And when he first started playing and really getting into it, it was tough for him to find clothing that he appreciated, that he really felt comfortable in and wanted to look his best and find something that fit his style, and it just wasn't out there for him. And it started with the golf glove, and looking back at some pictures from the 70s, saw a lot of the big names at the time wearing colored gloves to match their sweaters and their right. and their bell bottoms, I guess, at the time, and thought that was just a really cool place to start. And it started with the colored gloves, and basically out of his garage, he and Nicole were making them for him and his friends, and kind of grew around the L.A. market, and a lot of the country clubs and pros really saw the trend, the retro trend of that coming back. And not just the color, but a great feeling fitting glove is hopefully you guys experienced.
Yes.
But the color was kind of the kicker, and offered 17 different looks and styles and colors with it, and really took off from there. And the same pros and friends that were playing with the glove came back to him and asked him for some shoes and said, hey, take it a step farther. Let's match this up and build on that for us. And he saw an opportunity there with the shoes as well. It was during the time that he was looking at the shoes, I guess it was a really athletic trend in the marketplace. So a lot of shoes that were being built by the big guys that were truly athletic, full performance golf shoes, but right. didn't have the traditional look that he was looking for. As you can tell, I think, by the brand, he's got obviously a very high-end fashion sense, but he likes to keep a traditional look with more of a modern flair. It's kind of the way he likes to describe it.
Yes. Yeah,
and right. so when he started building his shoes, he wanted something really classic and clean and just a beautiful platform and traditional last and high-end leather. And that's kind of was phase two of it. And that really took off. And his first round of shoes were gorgeous, but they weren't true golf-specific shoes. The spike system wasn't, I guess, the best, but they looked fantastic. So a lot of good feedback there from buddies and good players and local pros. And so it's evolved into the line that you guys got to try where, we had to make a spiking system that would hold up to the best in the world. And the guy that literally swings out of his shoes, Bubba Watson. So
right.
it's evolved into not only, you guys described it great in your introduction, not only a true, beautiful, athletic golf shoe, but a very high-end, traditional, stylish one as well. And so we've merged that together, and the shoes have really taken off, and we've gotten a ton of exposure with Bubba and the high tops and the stars and stripes last weekend at the Olympics, and, yes. and hopefully we'll be wearing those in the Ryder Cup as well. But the shoes have been huge for us, and to take it one step farther.
So, there's just a snippet of about 5 minutes of that interview with G4. We'll post the whole thing in a couple days on Golf J, and I love talking to these guys, whether they're founders of companies or they work for companies with all this different types of equipment, and finding out how they find their niche and how they market
right.
it, because it's very competitive.
It sure is.
There's this whole, you got your Titleist and Callaways and TaylorMades, but then there's this whole ecosystem of other smaller companies, and G4, really, if you're sponsoring Bubba Watson, you're not too small.
Right.
And so I love the shoes. The gloves are really interesting in the fact that you can custom tailor it
right.
to, you know, different outfits, but they are $35, you know, a pair, so right. or a glove.
But if it's that good and it'll last longer, it's worth twice the price because you're paying $17 or $18 now for one that lasts a month in this weather we've had.
These will last long. You can right. tell as soon as you slip it on, it's just a higher quality leather than you're going to get in your average pro shop glove.
Right.
And like you say, twice the price, but if it lasts twice as long.
Right.
But, you know, if you're going to try to... I got an orange one. I can't wear that when I wear a purple shirt. You know, it's got to be... it's got to match. Otherwise, you look kind of silly out there. And so if you're going to get enough of them to, you know, fill out your whole wardrobe, you're going to spend a little pretty penny.
Just get one white one and then one orange one.
Some people out there, though, you know, with the means, certainly sure. buy, get 10 of them, different sure. colors. They'll last you for 2 years, maybe.
It will. You wear them.
So
one-tenth of the time.
An interesting name there, G4. So it's GFORE.com's a website if you want to check that out yourself. And we're going to post that full interview on the website in a couple of days. But back to the PGA Tour, the Barclays, looking for fantasy picks. It's great viewing here. You can watch from Bethpage Black Thursday through Friday, 2 to 6 p.m. on the Golf Channel. Saturday, early coverage, 1 to 2:30 on the Golf Channel, then 3 to 6 back on CBS. Sunday, noon to 1:30 on the Golf Channel, and then 2 to 6 on CBS. And FedEx Cup points leader Jason Day, the reigning Barclays champ, is back, along with U.S. Open title holder Dustin Johnson, had a roster set for 122 at the opening playoff stop. Sergio Garcia is going to sit this out. So we were talking earlier how... it really doesn't seem right that the playoffs start. You're right. going to sit one out. But Shane Lowry has also opted to play the final European Tour stop before the automatic Ryder Cup berths are locked in. So I guess they got one more week there. Masters champion Danny Willett is also missing. Emiliano Grillo and Smiley Kaufman, who won the season's first two events back in October, top a list of six rookies expected to crack the 2016 playoff lineup, in which they did. And so here we go. It's been a few weeks now since the PGA, and other than the PGA and the British Open and then the U.S. Open, this is the best field we've seen in a long time.
Right, absolutely right.
And it's going to be fun to see Jason Day and Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy and Dustin Johnson all playing in the same tournament.
Right.
So, Brownie, who's going to win?
So I think they get paired by their order as well. So I think number one and number two are paired.
Yep.
And so forth, right? Actually, I'm going to pick Jim Furyk.
Why not?
He's been a hot golfer. Up on the leaderboard again this past weekend. 2 months ago, I would have never mentioned his name. But I'm going to take the hot golfer and say Jim Furyk is way up on the leaderboard, if not win.
I like that pick. I got to go with my man Jason Day.
Yep.
He's... disappointing year so far. I mean, disappointing. He's number one in FedEx Cup playoffs, but didn't get another major title that we were almost gifting to him at the beginning of the year. So, I think Jason Day, ultimately, he starts the FedEx Cup playoffs ranked number one. If he can win this week, he'll have a commanding lead heading all the way towards East Lake. And
right. And
so, I got to go with Jason Day. I think he's after winning the Players' Championship, he kind of is disappointed, but towards the second half of the major season there, he's played better.
He got in contention a lot.
Yep.
Top five finishes and all that. Just hasn't pulled one out.
So I got Day. You got Furyk. I don't know who Rhett has because he's in North Carolina.
He's taking David Toms.
Hey, we'll give him David Toms.
I'm sure he's watching right now.
$50 a man.
There we go.
So... all right, we promised we were going to talk Canale Cup. We got about 15 minutes left in the show. And this is a local event, not a PGA Tour event, but our club, Seneca Falls Country Club, versus Silver Creek, the next town over, their course. And we've been doing it for 13 years, and Seneca Falls has won all 13.
Right.
But that's not really what we're here to talk about. I want to talk about, and you're as captain of our team, mm-hmm. I want to talk about some of the strategy that goes into setting these matches up and some of the in-match strategies. So as captain, when you get a team, your team together, 12 guys, what are you looking for when you pair them up to play in matches against the opponents?
Gotcha. So first to look for is the, you know, dynamics, obviously. Make sure, God forbid, we got two guys that get along, because it does mean we all get along.
Yep.
But they play well together. And I'm looking for, a lot of times, maybe different styles, where I got a long ball hitter and a short game player. Okay, because in the alternating shot and the best scramble format, I think you're better off having somebody that can hit a long ball, or not two long ballers together.
Right.
And two short ball hitters together. Okay, and then you can pick, like in the alternating shot, you got to declare who's going to tee off on the odd holes and the even holes. So strategically, you could say, okay, somebody hits the ball longer than you hit it. Your partner might want to tee off on 2, 4, 6, and 8 because you maybe can get longer drives out there than your opponents, and you can reach the sixth hole maybe easier because you can reach from his drive, for example. Maybe somebody's a better iron player, so I'm going to tee off on the odd number holes on the front side at Seneca Falls because the par threes are
That's exactly what I was thinking, and when I was talking to some of the guys on our team about, they were wondering, you know, what we should do or what they should do. I said to most of them, I said, well, hole 3 and 7 are par threes, yeah. So if you clearly think another guy is more comfortable hitting shots on those, then I think right. That's your answer.
Yes.
Let the other holes play out. But right. Those two par threes in a 9-hole alternate shot match, yes. are those two shots are right. So important.
And it's key in an alternating shot to be comfortable because you got one shot.
Yeah.
Best ball, scramble, you hit a crooked shot, you always got one more swing behind you. But in this case, it's one and done. So you got to be comfortable. And I don't pick who goes first and second or odds or evens within those matches. I try to get the teams together that have some dynamics. If they play together the last couple of years, they want to get together again, yeah. By all means, I leave it alone.
Right.
Okay, this year, the only substitutes we had were because of some medical reasons. We had a couple of players that couldn't make it this year.
Yep.
And when I substituted in, I just went one for one. I didn't shake the teams up any other way. Okay. That's what I try to do with the strategy of putting teams together. And let's face it, we all play enough together. We all know what we got as far as games go. Fortunately, everybody that I have selected over the years, not just the 12 now, but there's probably been 20 people who have played over the years.
Yep.
We all are competitive.
Right.
So I don't have any concerns about all that. So, and there's no animosity amongst anybody either. So I really just try to make sure that, let's say Jimmy Sinacropi hits the ball 300 yards.
No, I wish.
And I'm going to put him with somebody maybe to 220 because I want that balance.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to have worked well for us. Okay? That's the logic behind some of that.
Yeah, and I've played I played with Jason Peralt for years, and we had a stellar record, like 8-1-1, I think. We didn't lose them our first 8 points, I think, right. In matches before we split finally in the last year. We were partners. And then now I play with Bob LaPrade. Those are two wildly different personalities.
Yes.
And so I was able to go either way, but it is different. So with Jason, there's going to be a lot of emotion. There's going to be a lot of swings. Like, he's going to hole a chip, and he's going to explode, right. and I'm going to slap his hand. My hand might hurt after right. The hand slap.
Right.
And I could get into that. With Bob, it's just more subdued and steady the whole way. So right. They are different styles, and I think that for some, like I said, I can go either way. I think there's some guys that might prefer to be on that emotional side, mm-hmm. because they can feed off that. And right. There's other guys that would do better, like say Matt Ferrara, right. with Steve Brown. I think Matt is one of those guys that's going to try to stay steady the whole way, mm-hmm. not get too up, not get too down. Right. So yeah, there is that aspect of it. But then you go and we're playing these 9-hole matches, you know, it's almost over before it starts sometimes, it feels like. So if you get like 2 down after 3, that's quite a hole. You don't have 16 more holes to come back. And so it's difficult. And when you're playing for your teammates and not just yourself, it's even more pressure. You're 2 down. You don't want to be the one to, you know, you don't want to get in there and say, oh, I lost my match to your teammates. So.
The 9-hole matches are certainly difficult because of the short part of the match. You do get two behind early. It is tough to overcome it. To get a tie is fortunate in most cases. I mean, to win 3 holes out of the next 7 would be really quite an accomplishment to pull out a victory. The The other thing with the alternating shot is it's tough too because, again, you only got the one, you got one guy hitting a tee shot, and you tend to say, I'm sorry too much if you hit the shot,
yeah,
not so good.
Well, you feel really bad because now you don't have to play your mistake. Your opponent has to.
Right. And you got to talk a little bit more about, say we're going to go for a par five and we can't reach it. We got 300 yards to the par five for our second shot, right? And I'm hitting the shot and you're my partner. My question would be, where do you want the golf ball?
Yeah.
Do you like 100 yards? Do you like 75 yards? Do you like 125 yards? Okay, so I can't get caught up in my game at that point. I got to get caught up in your game.
Yeah, it's a true is the alternate shot is if you've never had a chance to play alternate shot, you're really missing out on a really fun way. Well, maybe fun's the wrong word. It's more pressure, but it's also more mental, more thinking.
Yes.
And it really is an interesting way to play golf with a partner. I wish there was more opportunities, I think, to play alternate shot because it is fun. We find ourselves playing scrambles all the time and, of course, best ball. But if you get a chance to play some alternate shot, it really is it will get you thinking. And I tell you, we play that alternate shot match right out the gate.
Yes.
And so that right away, it's just – you can't believe, I guess, the pressure – right out the gate. I think if we played it second after you were warmed up a little bit, but
you might play better, be more relaxed. Yep. At least you know what you got as far as your game goes.
Yep.
But you're right. You hit 30 balls on the range, and now you're on the first tee. And by the way, you're not teeing off. Your partner is. So you got to wait another 15 minutes before you hit.
That's right.
You know, a lot of there's that much more standing around and waiting.
And then when you get up around the green too, and you have a 25-foot birdie putt or a par putt. You want to try to make that putt, but you don't want to make your poor partner make a 5-footer coming back.
Right.
You know? So.
Before you get the I'm sorry, is that going there?
Yeah, which my partner Bobby and I never said I'm sorry to each other because we knew we didn't have to. I know he's trying as hard as he can. Right. He knows I'm trying as hard as he can. And just that ultimately trying to stay positive. And so when you turn to apologize, it just is not a positive thing. Action.
I totally agree.
So,
and I think knowing shot at our skill level too, if you just set up a goal to make all pars, don't worry about making birdies because you're probably make a couple bogeys anyways. But don't get crazy. Then the double bogeys and triple bogeys won't sneak in.
Well, and also don't if you are struggling on a hole and you say, "Geez, we got to get this up and down for double bogey." Who knows what your opponents are going to do because they only get one shot each too.
It's match play.
Yeah.
That's right. So watch what they're doing. You haven't got to hit the heroic shot if they're already not so great, right?
Yeah.
The main thing is to tie them and or beat them in the hole as well, but don't lose it.
I think when it comes down to it, though, with these club versus club matches that maybe some of our listeners and viewers have participated in, the nice thing about our relationship with the guys at Silver Creek is we always have a great time.
Yes, we do.
You know, so the matches are competitive, but after they're done, everybody – I just love seeing those guys, you know. So if it wasn't for this, I may not get a chance to spend a lot of time with those guys.
Right.
And so to me, that's one of the highlights of it all is just getting to hang out after and, you know, and talk about the matches. And so it's a good thing. And if you're sitting watching this and you're a member at a club and you have a club 10 miles down the road, you know, strike up a conversation and say, let's get something going. It's a great thing to do too in the fall.
Right.
After the, and we had done the Canal Cup in the fall plenty of times, but you know, after the season started winding down, it gives you one more thing to look forward to.
Right.
So congratulations, Captain. We've done it again.
I appreciate the accolades, but quite honestly, there's 12 people on that team that really wanted to win. And, you know, so I get the accolades because of being a captain. My role is pretty small overall. We got good people to draw from at Seneca Falls, and I'll take those guys to war with me.
Yeah, I'm proud of all of them, and I'm proud of the way that they conduct themselves, you know, when we play in that event or really when they represent us in any tournament, anywhere.
Right.
I'm really proud of the guys that we play golf with down there. And to be able to not only congratulate them on a good round on a Sunday morning, hey, good shooting, you know, we really, you know, embrace after this. And, you know, it's a shared golf experience.
That's right. Sure was.
So I love it.
I think there was a lot of emotion in our team photo this year because it was after the event. Usually we take the team photo prior.
Yeah.
But it was a pretty good experience on the first tee.
It was a good photo.
Yeah, it was.
And you can see that photo at SenecaFallsCountryClub.com right now if you want to check it out. But, hey, another team event that's coming up is the Ryder Cup.
Yep.
And I don't think we'll be playing in that, but...
they have altered a shot, though, for the viewers. Pay attention to it.
Pretty interesting on the European side I want to look at real quick here. Matt Fitzpatrick clinched the final spot for the European Tour qualifying, I guess, even though I think that there is a chance for Shane Lowry to sneak into a spot, but Fitzpatrick has clinched his spot, and he's the youngest Englishman to make the team in 30 years. But here's what I have as a question for you in the final minutes of this podcast is, Darren Clark has some. We always focus on the American picks. Right. Who is Davis Love going to pick? But on the European side, you got Russell Knox, Lee Westwood, Soren Kjeldsen, who's been playing well, Thomas Peters, Martin Keimer, and Shane Lowry, and Andrew Beef Johnston. So those are kind of the contenders for Clark to pick.
Right.
And I still say Bernhard Langer should be a contender, you know, and maybe he will sneak him in.
He's getting consideration.
But who do you pick out of those guys if you're Darren Clark?
I got to take Russell Knox, knowing that he's fourth in the FedEx.
Got it.
I would take Lee Westwood because this is a pretty young team over there, I think, experience-wise.
Younger than normal
for
the Europeans.
It's hard for me not to take him. And honestly, I think I take Soren Kjeldsen there. I think he's better than Martin Keimer right now, better than Shane Lowry.
Mm-hmm.
Andrew Beef Johnson's kind of burst onto the scene here lately.
Yeah.
But Soren Kjeldsen there plays solid golf in all those major events. I think, do they get three or four? They get three, I think. It's their choice, not any rules.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. But if it's three, I'm taking Knox, Westwood, and Kjeldsen.
Yeah, if it's, I think Knox is the no-brainer. I really like Shane Lowry. I think that he would excel in that team environment. You know, and then really, if you're talking about a momentum guy, a charisma guy, Andrew Beef Johnson, you know.
Weekly from our squad years ago.
Yeah, and but again, Lee Westwood has played very well this year. And he's one of those guys that has never won the major, and that's what he's going to be remembered for, like Colin Montgomery. But he does well in the Ryder Cup,
sure,
and he's
does.
Got a lot of Ryder Cup experience. So I'd probably go Lowry, Westwood, and Knox. But that's going to be the last week of September, first week of October, that Ryder Cup. And that is the highlight of the golfing year, really. You know, it's only every other year we get to see it. It's a whole notch above the President's Cup.
So, sure is.
So that's going to be – and we haven't won it.
In a long time.
Right, and so it's going to be a Hazeltine. So it's going to be fun to watch. So we'll talk a little bit more about that next week in the American side and then go through each roster because I think they'll be finalized by next week. Maybe the captain's picks won't, but the qualifying players will be. So real quick, I got your Golf J trivia answer. Brant Snedeker is the only player to win the FedEx Cup and make it back all the way to East Lake the following year.
Wow.
Which is kind of shocking because, you know, if you win that FedEx Cup like Horschel did or Jason Day obviously has a really good – or not Jason Day. Who won the FedEx Cup last year? You know, I hate when I do this live in the podcast
Jordan
and
Spieth.
I start drumming. Yeah, Spieth.
Yeah.
So Spieth has a good chance to do it again this year. But only one player has done it in the history of the FedEx Cup, and that's Snedeker.
Wow.
So – I thought that was a little surprising that you could be at the top of the world one year and then not, you know, even get back there the next year. So be in the top 32.
Top 32.
So,
yeah.
But, yeah, that's it. So FedEx Cup playoffs are starting.
Yep.
Rhett will be back next Monday after his wonderful vacation. And we'll be talking about who won at Bethpage and who will advance. And so, Brownie, thanks for coming up here again.
I always enjoy it.
It's always a lot of fun talking golf. So thanks to everybody for spending time with us here on the GolfJ.com podcast. Connect with us online at Twitter at the Golf J, Instagram at the _ Golf J. We're on Facebook at Facebook.com/GolfJ. All of our episodes and the best of the wide world of golf on the web can be found at GolfJ.com. We'll be back next Monday night at 9 o'clock to talk about the Barclays, the Ryder Cup, and golf tip and all that good stuff. So until then, my friends, hit them long, not often.